You are listening to the Live Free Experience. I'm your host, Brianna Bowley, trauma coach for high performers. I believe that understanding the nervous system and all its wisdom is the key to creating and experiencing all that we desire. And I believe that honest, anything goes conversation paves the way for us to begin a healing journey that has us continuously stepping into more of who we are. I've been blessed to work with, for, and alongside some of the best of the best in their chosen fields. And it's my pleasure to be the platform to share the wisdom and insights I've gained with each of you. Together, we'll explore trauma-informed performance and optimization, business, and self-expression. So in a world where everything touches everything, I encourage you to listen selfishly and with your own circumstance in mind. As I promise, if you found yourself here, there's a piece of wisdom wanting to land in your world.
Okay, so I'm excited about today. It's the first in-person podcast I've done in a very long time. Actually, that's a lie. I lied. I already lied.
Not off to a great start.
It's the first I've done in about 6 months. Before that, it's been a long time. And the guest that I have joining today is actually, this is round two on the podcast. We did a podcast years ago.
We did.
He's one of my nearest and dearest and longest friends, Christian Smith.
Thank you, Brianna Bowley. Nearest and dearest friend.
Yeah.
We've gone for a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who aren't familiar with you, maybe they haven't listened to a previous episode together.
Which went for ages.
It did.
Yeah.
Tell us, who is Christian Smith?
Do you know what? I think so many people that, you know, introduce themselves just waffle. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try and avoid doing that. So basically, the dot point version of who I am is now I'm a relationship coach. Before that, I was a painter, and a bit of the background story is I was painting. That was my trade. I did that for a long time, and then pretty much hated my life, was diagnosed with depression, suicidal. I was a huge skeptic of personal development as well, because I thought I had all my shit figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually got into personal development, and then figured out, you know, I liked helping people, so treated it as a hobby for a long time, which I see a lot of other coaches do as well. Mm. You know, they think that, you know, I can just do a course and then charge people $1,500 for 10 hours or 10 sessions. But really, business, when I fully invested, was the beginning of COVID. Mm. And so what was that? I think it was April 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, because I was still on that seesaw of, you know, well, I've got to paint because I need money because my hobby isn't paying me enough.
Mm.
And I thought COVID is the worst time to try and build a business. And I thought, but I like challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I completely quit my job and moved into coaching. And it's been a roller coaster ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's me. Am I an entrepreneur? Nah, I'm just someone that's just trying to figure shit out and go and help some people along the way.
Yeah.
That's it.
Beautiful. What was the shift? What was the thing that shifted to have you go like, okay, I'm going to stop treating the hobby like a hobby?
Yeah, great question. For me, I remember, you know this person, Greta.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Adelaide staying with Greta, and I was in her lounge room, and we were sitting down watching ScoMo on the TV,
okay.
You know, and COVID, this new thing is rapidly, you know, affecting hospitals and, you know, people are dying and, you know, I don't think any of that was actually real.
Mm.
But I thought to myself, I've wanted to change careers for years.
Mm-hmm.
And with the threat of COVID, not knowing what it was going to be like, you know, people are potentially going to lose their jobs and the economy is going to crash and all of this stuff. I thought, well, what do I have to lose?
Mm.
Like, if all these people are going to be out of work and life's going to be completely different, I may as well do the thing I want to do, but just really go after it.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I don't do it now, like, when am I going to do it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, am I going to have to wait for the next pandemic, the next, like, world event before I've got enough reasons to go, oh, yeah, now I might actually do something. So I just, yeah, and I think it was a Tuesday. And then the Wednesday, went into work because I was just helping a mate out painting. And I went on the Wednesday and I said to him, I'm going to finish up this week. And then that Friday, and there was a few things lined up because my stepdad was driving over to Queensland. So, you know, I could come back to Queensland. That's right, because we had to, like, get across the border.
That's right, yeah.
Felt like, you know, a Mexican getting from America. You know? Like, shit, we've got to, you know, hide in the back of the van.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And get across the border.
Pay someone large sums of money to smuggle you in.
Yeah, that's a different story in itself, right? So I'll touch on that in a moment, but... So there was a plan to get back to Queensland. So anyway, I told Alan, who I was working with, I'm going to finish up. And I think then that Friday, finished up, handed, like, I had a company car and stuff that I negotiated for the few weeks I was there, handed that back in. And then I think, the following Wednesday or Thursday, Mike and I made the trip from South Australia to Queensland in 2 days in a van.
Fuck.
That's like flying from Australia to London with less leg room. Yeah. So, but crossing the border was extremely interesting. Yeah, because what made it interesting was the rules were changing so much and no one actually knew, like even the police.
Yes.
No one actually knew what the fucking rules were.
Yeah.
So what happened to us was... I'd previously changed my license to Queensland, but Mike's license was still in South Australia. So we're driving across, I can't remember exactly which way we came, but we crossed the border at Goondiwindi. I think that's how it's pronounced. And we roll up to the checkpoint and the cop comes over and... Like, we had the back of the van loaded with stuff and I had a swag and things like that. And the cop comes up to the window. Cop was really friendly and said, which is rare because normally they leave the good cops in the stations, not out on the streets, from my experience. And then, so the cop comes up and asks us to show our licenses. I was in the passenger seat. I showed my license. The cop didn't even, like, get it. I just showed it. And he looked at it and went, oh, that's a Queensland license. He's like, you're right, mate. You can go in. Right? Mike shows his license and it's South Australia. And then the cop's questioning Mike and saying, you know, why are you coming across? And we had the permits as well. You had to print the permits out. So we had those. And nothing we were doing was illegal. And so Mike had to, and this is when you had to quarantine for like, was it 7 days or 14 days?
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember.
But Mike shows his license, which is South Australia. So then the cop's like, why are you coming here? And it's like, well, we've got a house here. Well, where's the title for the house to prove that you actually own property? Anyway, Mike comes, the cop takes him out, goes to fill paperwork out. Mind you, Mike and I had both been sitting next to each other for like 36 hours, well, not 36, but like the day before. And because my license was Queensland and Mike's was South Australia, the cop said, well, Mike, you've got to isolate, but Christian, you don't because you've got a Queensland license. Now, if either one of us had COVID, the other one would have had it because we were sitting in the same fucking car.
Totally.
And then just after that, Mike went through a stop sign and then got pulled over by another cop.
Oh, no.
And this is like just after we went through the border and the other cop pulled us over. And then the other cop sees in the back of the van, sees the swag and starts accusing us of, oh, have you been like camping in the outback to try and get across into Queensland. So then he gave us a hard time.
Aww.
And then he grabbed my license, looked it up, and he came back and said, are there any rifles or firearms on board? And I'm like, no. And he's like, you've got firearms registered in your name. I'm like, no, I don't. He's like, yeah, you do. I'm like, no, I don't. And he's like, well, on your file, you've got firearms registered. I'm like, mate, I've never had a firearms license.
Wow.
Ever. So I said to him, well, does that mean I can get guns? And, yeah, he didn't like that. I'm like, because I don't have a firearms license. Like, never applied for one, nothing. But, yeah, he was adamant. Okay. It's like, well, you got firearms registered to you. Like, well, that's the first I know. Hopefully someone's not out there shooting people with my...
using your name.
Alleged firearms.
Ugh.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. COVID was fucked from the start.
It was definitely an interesting time. I went through similar, like, you know, for me, like, I spent many years before I started my business. Well, even after I'd started my business, kind of in that, I think we get fed a lot of, like, get a real job. You know, and so I'd spent however many years working in self-development, working as a coach and you know, and even before that working as a personal trainer, and I still got that, like, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to live in the real world? And so on and so forth. And then COVID happened and all of a sudden all the people who were in real jobs were yes. out of jobs, and I was the only one whose life had not changed.
Yeah.
Nothing changed for me, you know. And yeah. I did kind of do a similar thing where I was like, okay, cool. Well, I've been blessed that what I've created has allowed me to not be heavily impacted by COVID. And, you know, like, it kind of dissipated some of that self-doubt yeah. of like, oh, I don't have a real job.
Yeah, exactly.
So it gave me a little something extra to commit fully in a way that I hadn't before.
Yeah, because all the other people now no longer had real jobs either.
Yeah. And, you know, it was, I think that it gets drilled into us, this thing of, like, job security, that you have yeah. a job security when you're an employee that you don't have when you're an entrepreneur or when you're, when you're self-employed. Yeah. And it was the opposite. When COVID happened, it was like, oh, I have job security because I can kind of do what I want here
yeah,
versus absolutely. All these people who had the traditional job security who were just, you know, overnight out of jobs.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that contributed, I guess, to me making that shift.
Mm.
The last 2 years I painted, so for the first 12 years I painted, I had two employers
mm-hmm.
over a 12-year period. The last 2 years I painted, I had 12 employers. So by the end of 14 years, I was thinking, well, I actually have no job security in working for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But if I work for myself, I control, you know, how hard I work, how hard I reach out to people, push myself, what work I go and get, and whether that's painting or whether that's coaching, it's the same. Mm. Yeah, and that for me was, well, there's no security in, like, having a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why relationship coaching?
For a long time, for about 10 or 12 years, I really struggled with relationships. My pattern was the first relationship I was in, when that ended, I was like, it's all their fault. It's not me.
Nothing to do with me.
Yeah. The second relationship might be 10% me, but 90% them. Come on, I've got my shit figured out, right? The third relationship, I'm like, maybe 20% me.
Yeah.
But still, if they changed,
mm.
my life would be easier. And this happened about 5 times over, you know, a 10 or 12-year period. And eventually I realized, hang on, there's one common person in all of these relationships. And I didn't like realizing that, because that meant that I had to work. But that's also, and I only discovered this recently when I was doing some, you know, personal development work myself, that part of my depression when I was diagnosed with that was, like, because a relationship ended.
Mm.
right? So I thought a relationship was going to fix my money problems because I was shit with money. I thought it was going to make me happy. I thought, you know, that a relationship was going to solve Christian's life. And it never did.
Mm.
It just amplified all my problems.
Yeah.
So, well, I remember the relationship where I thought, oh, well, now there's two of us earning money, so it's going to be easier. I'm like, how the fuck did we end up with double the debt?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But we just spent more than we earn. That's a really quick way to get into debt as well. And so, you know, part of my journey was, one, building a relationship with myself, realizing that, you know, a relationship isn't going to make me happy. I was also extremely needy, ignorant to it, but upon reflection that, yeah, I thought that I needed a relationship, like I needed someone else to love me.
Yeah.
And then, and I understand all this now, but whenever someone, regardless of their gender, whenever we're going into a relationship thinking, oh, well, I need you to love me, well, I become like a needy little fucking lost puppy dog. And then you're, over time, you start going, like, get the fuck away from me. Right? And then I'm just trying to chase and chase and chase. So the first step was, you know, feeling or realizing I had to change. And yeah, changing, I guess, why I wanted a relationship. And I can remember what I call, like, I'd start dating myself. Like, I'd go out and get coffee by myself. And the first time I did it, or go to the movies by myself, I felt so fucking weird and awkward.
Yeah.
Now it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'd see other people and I'm like, you guys aren't even talking. I'm sitting here having way more fun by myself. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept, the dating yourself piece, because I think I've always just naturally done that. You know, I've traveled a lot on my own. Like, I'm very used to my own company. And, you know, I take myself to the movies on my own. I go out for coffee on my own. I go out for dinner on my own, you know. And, yeah, like, to hear that for most people, it's this really uncomfortable thing. It's curious to me. Like, I think it shows a lot about the collective and I guess what the collective values. And I think this pressure for you're not whole unless you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're not whole unless, yeah, you're surrounded by people. You've got a partner. You've got, you know, to be on your own means that there's something wrong, which is actually, in my opinion, the opposite, you know? If You're whole when you can be on your own.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Why do you think people, I guess, struggle being on their own and almost need a partner, you know, in their life? Why do you think that is?
There's a lot of layers to that. Well, I think part of it would be that we are socially conditioned that if you're single, then there's something wrong with you.
Yep.
So it's this thing of like, you know, like I need the relationship to prove that I'm enough.
Yep.
But I think largely it's codependency, you know, like there's a lot of elements of you can avoid looking at your own stuff when you have the stimulus of someone else and their stuff. And
so it's almost a distraction.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, because it's when you're on your own, all you've got is yourself. And it's why I think a lot of the time, you know, when we are on our own, we turn to Netflix or we turn to social media scrolling or, you know, like these quick ways of having noise still going on, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane. What I find, you know, I obviously work a lot in nervous system regulation. To ask someone to sit in silence for 5 minutes for 99% of people is fucking impossible. You know, it's just like overwhelming. I can't sit in silence for 5 minutes.
Just on that, I remember years ago, you did I'm not even going to try and guess the retreat name.
Passiona?
That's it. Yeah. I knew it started with a V. Most good things start with a V. That So that was 10 days.
10 days, yeah.
What, like, reflecting back on that now, what was that, what did you take away from that that is still with you today? Because I think there's incredible power, and I agree with you that, you know, being able to sit with yourself is tremendously powerful.
Yeah.
But, you know, having 10 days of, you know, not silence but meditation and things. So what have you carried forward from that that is still with you?
So for context for the listeners, Vipassana is, it's 10 days, silence, you're not allowed to look at anyone, you're not allowed to speak to anyone, you eat when they tell you to eat, you sleep when they tell you to sleep, you have designated times to shower, and then the rest of the time, it's, so you're waking up at 4 a.m., you're meditating for 10 hours in, you know, 1 to 2 hour increments. And then, you know, and you're not allowed to write, you're not allowed to read, nothing. There's no, basically all you do is eat, shower, meditate.
Wow.
And so for me, I mean, I signed up for that and I was like, I'm so ready. Like, I was on top of the world when I signed up for it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to fucking crush this. 2 weeks before, I went through a really painful breakup and I almost pulled the pin. Because I was like, fuck no, like, I can't be going through.
Now I've got 10 days of thinking about that asshole.
Yeah, like, I'm like, man, I have to go through 10 days of just sitting in grief. And what came up for me was, first of all, I noticed all of the ways that I distract myself. What I found over those 10 days, I'm giving away, you know, workings of my psyche here. But I noticed within those 10 days
chronic
how
masturbation.
Much...
masturbation. Yeah.
That wasn't allowed. But how much my brain did go to sex.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, I use sex as entertainment and as distraction a lot.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, and then there was this unreal experience on day 8. I'll never forget it. And I'm not going to go into what it was because it feels still very sacred to me. But there was something in the background that had been playing out in my life that I'd never told anyone about. It was my secret. It was something that I was really ashamed of. It had been in the background for probably, fuck, how old was I when I did Vipassana? I think I was 24 when I did Vipassana. So it had been maybe about 16 years of it being in the background.
Wow.
And it was a thing that I'd never let myself look at. I'd never admit it to myself. I'd never, it was like, I'll just bubble wrap that. And fucking duct tape it up and throw it into like a dark corner of my mind and not go there. And I remember on day 8, it was wild. So I'd done my 2 hours of meditation in the morning, had my breakfast, and then we were into our, I had my 1 hour of meditation, had breakfast, and then we were in our 2 hour slot of meditation. And I remember we were about 45 minutes in and I had this feeling where it was like this thing that was in the dark corner of my mind was like slowly coming forward. And I was like, fuck, 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 fuck. This is all while I'm just sitting there in silence. I'm like, fuck, fuck, fuck. I don't, no. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to look at that. And I was like, what can I do? I'm not allowed to eat. Like we were only allowed to eat at certain times. So I'm not allowed to eat. So I can't push it down with food.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go, you know, socialize and interact with someone.
Yep.
Like I can't go, you know, get on Netflix or social media, like all of the normal things that I would normally distract myself with that I didn't know I was distracting myself with, I couldn't go to. So I felt this thing just creeping forward. And then it was like, it just clicked. And I had all these memories come rushing back that I'd kind of suppressed. Well, I had suppressed. And then it was like this breakup that had happened, like, I think it was like 12 days prior or something.
Yeah.
It was like, just connected all of the dots back with every relationship I'd had, every, like, the way I saw men, the way I saw me, the way I saw my relationship with women and how I interacted with women, all of them connecting back to this one thing that I'd been denying for like 16 years.
Wow.
And all of that came because I had there was nothing I could distract myself with. And it was still to this day the most healing, probably one of the most healing things of my life, which is really saying something because I've done a lot of work on myself. And it just came from not letting myself distract myself with
Yeah.
Bullshit, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that speaks for itself as to the power of... And it's fucking hard. Like, I mean, still, like, I did 10 days of Vipassana, 10 hours of meditation every day for 10 days, and I still struggle to sit with myself at times, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, I just want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned there. One being, you know, we both every week work with people based on their perceptions or how you know, events or traumas or what in so many different areas of life, whether they be business, relationships, traumas, whatever. But on that day eight, when that sort of popped up, did you also find, and what I'm referring to is, I guess, our brain or our subconscious, we're never given a challenge, I guess, that we can't overcome, we can't deal with. And anything that our mind, or this is just my view, anything our mind throws up for us, it's because it's relevant for us to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I tell clients that of, you know, trust what comes up.
Yeah.
And did you find that as well, that maybe during that experience or upon reflection of that experience, that you began to trust what your brain gave you in times as well?
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, it's like I said, like when I signed up for the retreat, I was in a really good place. I felt really solid and I was like, I'm going to fucking ace this. And then, you know, like I almost pulled out of it because I went through this breakup and I was like, it's not the right time. It's not the right time. Like everything's fucked in my life. My life's falling apart. I'm emotional. I'm grieving. Like, you know, like I'm mourning the loss of this breakup and it's not the right time, but it was the perfect time.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, like I think I had to have that. I had needed to go through that recent breakup to then have the reference point of the pain to then be able to link back. Okay, well, this makes sense why this relationship ended the way it did because of what's come up here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I would go one step further and say, yes, it did create trust that whatever popped up for me was perfect. But even more than that, whatever popped up in the external world was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like that everything that comes to us is symbolic and is an invitation, you know, and that if we pay attention to life enough, we're always being given exactly what we need.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's my message to any of my previous clients, current clients or future clients. When I'm talking to the listeners directly here. When we're asking you questions around, you know, what's the benefit? What's the drawback? Mm. Tell me, you know, explain this to me, that you just trust what your mind gives you because it's coming up for a reason.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, so for the overthinkers out there listening, fucking stop it. You're making our lives more difficult.
Yeah.
The other thing was, you know, you mentioned that leading up to it, it was, yeah, life's good. Like, I'm going to fucking nail this. And then, of course, the humbling experience comes to, you know, bring us back down to that, you know, balanced area. And isn't that so true that whenever we want to create a change, whether it be coaching, whether it be a new job, whether it be a new relationship, like there always tends to be a challenge to go, how bad do you actually want it?
Totally. Yeah, totally. I often say, you know, I started working with my mastermind group, Warrior Woman Collective. So we kicked off mid-January. And so I say to them, you know, it's a 6-month container. So it's a large chunk of time together. And so naturally through that 6-month process, a lot comes up. And I always say to them, like, anything that comes up in this container is perfect. Like, trust what comes up. And it makes me laugh because I've had two women who, and I'm sure both of them will listen to this. I've had two women who signed up for this mastermind and both had the same, part of what they were wanting to move through within the mastermind was shifting their money challenges. And both of them around a similar time had this money thing come up where suddenly their income dropped and their expenses increased.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was the, oh my God, I don't think I can do the mastermind. I'm going to have to drop out. And of course, you know, I did my coaching thing and encouraged them, you know, like what's coming up here is perfect. And if the antidote is made from the venom, like what's in this for you? And all in perfect timing. I want to just say that all in perfect timing. So there's no judgment here. One of them contracted.
Yeah.
Pulled out of the mastermind, pulled out of their commitment, and ultimately repeated the same pattern that she came to me for.
Yeah.
The other, I said, okay, what new part of yourself can you call forward here?
Mm.
And she did something that she doesn't normally do, and she asked for help. And within 24 hours, so she's hit me up. She said, I don't know if I can do the mastermind anymore. You know, my income's dropped. Like, I'm injured. I can't work, so on and so forth. You know, my expenses have increased. And I said, okay, well, what's here for you? What's being called forward? And so she asked for help.
Yeah.
And 24 hours later, she's messaged me, cool, I'm in, let's fucking do this. And yeah, like a micro shift of just asking for help where she normally wouldn't.
Yeah.
Shifted everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and broke that pattern.
Yeah.
And it's the 1% difference that makes a difference. You know, when you look at a 1% shift that completely changes the trajectory of where you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I get caught in this. We think that it has to be some huge shift to get the shift, but it's literally just like a.
Yeah. 1%. Small things done consistently create massive change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing with 1% shifts, it doesn't feel like you're doing anything different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very true.
Like, I remember when I first really started going to business, you know, and you start, well, I started, like, collecting the data, right, and mapping out what you do in a day, and it doesn't feel like you're doing anything.
Yeah.
Right, and initially, it might be calling people, right? So I think my initial goal was something like call 5 people a day or 3 people a day, 3 or 5, something like that. And, you know, so you do that for a week, right? So that's like a 1% difference. And then the next week it's, well, talk to 3 people, right? Which is different from just making 5 calls a day. Now you've got to actually talk to 3 people. So you might end up calling 8 people to get 3 on the phone, right? And then the third week, you know, book 2 meetings. And so over time, it doesn't really feel like you're making any difference, yet you get to the end of the month and you hit the magical 10K month and look, it doesn't have to be a 10K month. Like it's whatever. The point is, it's the small incremental shifts that, whether it be in a business sense, whether it be in a relationship sense. So for instance, it could be if in a relationship, sending a good morning text, right? Asking how your partner's day was when they get home. It's the small shifts that create the massive difference in things.
Yeah.
Especially in relationships. You don't need to go and do some, and I've done this. So I've tried. I've proved it doesn't work. You can't be an ass and then go, but I've booked us a night away and it's a nice dinner. And, you know, we're going out on a boat cruise and then we're, you know, I'm going to give you 37 orgasms and, you know, you're going to scream my other name, which is God, right? To a guy, that's like, yeah, but why wouldn't they want that? But it's, no, what they want is like a good morning message.
Yeah.
Or eye contact when you're chatting, which I'm practicing right now. You know, being present when you talk.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know for me years ago, it was, no, you just do like big things. What do you mean you want to leave? Like, I just bought you a house.
You know what? So, okay. So I've been playing around with this a lot in my world. Like my coaching, I love archetypes.
Yeah.
I love archetypes. And so I've just brought out, shameless plug here, I've just brought out a new program called Inner King. And it's basically about like tapping into everything we're talking about here, like commitment, responsibility, like being an adult, you know, and and ultimately, you know, like it's for women to tap into their inner masculine, their inner king, you know, and when we consider what it takes to be a king overseeing a kingdom, we don't think of the king as being like he's away from the kingdom for, you know, 2 weeks and then he just shows up one day and is like, okay, like I'm gonna, I don't know, do this for my people, and then he fucks off for another 3 weeks. It's like consistency. Like he's consistent. To be a good leader, you have to be committed and consistent. And I think that, you know, like for women, tapping into that inner king, that inner leader, but also in terms of relationships, like if you want your woman to feel like a queen and you want her to stay committed, then there has to be that kingship there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to touch on something that I've only very recently, and I'm talking the last week, started to think about.
Okay.
Right.
Here we go.
And I think, yeah, well, I think this is going to get real fucking interesting.
Okay.
Because there's so many different dynamics. I'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Values.
Mm-hmm.
We both know what they are,
mm-hmm.
right? Tangible things, yes. Not the fucking social idealisms like
freedom.
Freedom, love, honesty. No shit. I've never woken up and gone, today I want everyone to disrespect me, treat me like shit.
Fucking lie fucking to me. Trapped.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I want no one to love me. Right? So just if you want to love me, fuck off. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, talking about proper values.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where did I have this thought? Might have been in the shower or on the toilet. That's right over most of my thinking.
Me too.
Anyway, so we all lead within our highest values.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where we have the potential to be our best leader. So my thought the other day was, and I'm still navigating this, because when you look at values and then masculine and feminine energy...
Mm.
So typically, masculine and feminine energy, the masculine is the leader,
mm-hmm.
not the male, the masculine energy. I know you understand that.
Yep.
So, but what if in a relationship, this is where I'm thinking, what if the woman has a higher value on the relationship, the intimate relationship, than the male does? So then my thinking is, because she has the potential to be the leader in the relationship, can that cause a conflict with masculine and feminine energy with the male or her expectation of the male to be the leader? Do you know what I'm getting at?
I think so. Okay. I don't know if this is going to answer your question, but something I've become really aware of over the last probably 12 months is that I believe that, so the feminine is generally the more emotional, the more emotional being.
Yeah, or more emotional connected.
Yes. Thank you for discerning that. You're right.
Otherwise, I'll get a whole bunch of hate mail like, I'm not fucking emotional. Like, have you read your message?
Okay, in a relationship dynamic, my belief is that women lead in the emotional realm.
Yep.
Men lead in more of the, like, so women lead by who they be.
Yep.
Right? So if I'm, like, emotionally disrespectful to you, if I, you know, don't hold myself with integrity, if I don't basically hold myself from a place of my inner king,
mm-hmm.
who I be, like, my energy's flaky, my energy's just like you can't trust it. You will become defensive, right?
Yep.
Or you'll feel like you can't express yourself safely because you never know how I'm going to respond.
Yep.
So I think women lead a relationship in who they be. Men lead in the sense of like planning the dates or, you know, like more of the doing.
Kind absolutely. Of
realm.
Yep.
So I think that it's like, maybe I'm not understanding the nuances of your question, but I think that women do lead the relationship.
Yeah. And that's what I'm now coming to realize, right? Because there's no one thing that you go, do it this way, and it works 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Right? Because, but then even if we look at all the different types of modalities within coaching that are out there at the moment, and specifically, you know, just relationships, but it's the same in jiu-jitsu. There's actually no new ideas.
Mm.
Like all the different, whether it's breath work, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's putting fucking, what are they called? The fancy rocks, crystals around fancy yourself. Rocks. Like, it doesn't sort of matter what you do, because if you believe it works, then you're probably going to get a result.
Yeah.
So, and I know one of my blind spots had been because I'd looked at everything on one side, or I went so down the rabbit hole on one particular thing, you can start to look at that and go, okay, well, that's how it's got to go, right? But yeah, then when you start looking at it, you're going, well, hang on, it's like science and religion or science and spirituality. They're actually arguing over the same fucking thing. They've just got different,
yeah,
like names for things. So it's like, if my highest value, which is not, but if my highest value is business, Emma, my partner, her highest value was family, then I'm going to lead in the area of business and she's going to lead in area of family. But then, like, if we switch that and you go, okay, well, if my values are coaching, connecting, or coaching, learning, and relationship, and hers are relationship, family, business, well, because relationship is third on mine and first on hers, then, and this is some of the question, is she automatically going to lead in the area of relationship because she has a higher value on it? But then when you look at masculine and feminine energy, you go, some people go, well, the male's got to be the leader. But I think that's very black and white to look at it like that as well, because I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's what's true for me, that we both have masculine and feminine energy. And yes. I know, I'm not going to mention any names, but there are some quite big relationship groups out there that say men are masculine, women are feminine.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you buy into that, you're going to fuck yourself up.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, when we look at the hormonal profiles of men and women, and this is a generalization.
Yeah.
Most women, like estrogen, like the hormones that women have higher percentages of are the hormones that like trigger off having more of a value on connection and relationship and romance and community.
Yep.
Whereas men, high testosterone, it's like they're driven more towards business and providing and getting shit done. Right?
Absolutely.
And so, of course, women have most of the time a higher value on relationships.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I spent many years waiting for men to lead in relationship and wondering why they weren't. And then I realized, and I love that you've said about both men and women have both masculine and feminine energies within them. Because what I realize is that for me to lead in relationship and to be deeply feminine and in a way that inspires a man to lead through action in relationship, I actually had to be really connected to my masculine.
Yeah.
Right? Like if my partner, if I was dating someone and they said some shit that I didn't like.
Yeah.
The feminine, chaos. Yeah. Emotionally reactive.
Yeah.
Creates distrust. He then starts to go, oh, I have to watch what I say.
Yeah.
I can't express myself safely. Yeah, he shuts down, right?
Yeah.
I call it emotional, it's emotional disrespect, right? Yeah. So to be emotionally respectful, I have to be really connected with my inner masculine, my inner king, to hold myself in a way that even when my feminine's gone into chaos, when he says something to me that I don't like, I can hold myself in a way where I'm not self-abandoning, but I'm also not going to fucking lash out. I'm going to be able to sit there and logically speak to what I'm feeling and interact with him.
Yeah.
Right? And so, yeah, it's like the feminine has to be connected to an inner masculine in order to be able to lead emotionally in a way that inspires him to lead in action.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So I had a really cool moment with that after my last event, Empowered Relationships, the one that I had at the Q1 on the Gold Coast. So what I realized was when I'm in presentation mode, I'm masculine. Like, you're leading that room for the 2 days. Part of leading that room is also being of service, mm-hmm. giving everything you've got to the people that are there. So it's all about, and this is the same in relationships, masculine energy wants to serve. Mm-hmm. So with the people in that room, I'm like, let me give you everything I've got, because that's why you're here, right? Mm-hmm. So just, you're going to get everything. Or masculine, give, 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 give. At the end of the 2 days, 7 o'clock comes around, the event ends, I've exhausted my giving.
Mm-hmm.
So now my masculine, who is generally the decision maker, the decisiveness, mm-hmm. all of that stuff, that's spent, right? Like, it doesn't want that anymore. Now the feminine energy, typically it's like fluid, it flows, it doesn't like making decisions. But that's what I need to be in mm-hmm. order to nurture myself so my masculine can then heal.
Mm-hmm.
So what I realized at the end of the event, it was like a day or two after the event, I went, fuck, hang on. The next event that I run, my masculine energy needs to plan for my feminine energy to nurture my masculine.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So totally. Then in the lead up to the next event, I was like, oh, it's not just the event. Now I've also got a plan how my feminine energy is going to nurture my masculine,
mm.
which is masculine. But then when the masculine energy turns off, the feminine has a plan
mm-hmm.
to go, right, well, you know, you're not going to book any meetings in the following day.
Yes.
You're going to book a massage like that day. You're going to sleep in. Yes. You're going to go out with the people you like. You're going to have breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, go have a coffee. You're just going to chill out, yeah. do whatever. But that's all planned before the event so I know I don't burn out.
Yes. I love this because, so this is, as you know, I do jiu-jitsu. I've competed before in jiu-jitsu and I intend on competing again in the yep. future. And it was this really cool thing to witness, especially being a female in a heavily male-dominated sport, and a sport that does require, like, grit, you yep. know? Like, it's a combat sport. Watching kind of, I guess, what the expectation and the common narrative of, like, this is what you have to be like when you compete.
Yep.
Watching that versus what I knew internally to be what was best for me, yep. especially being a female. So, you know, coming into that comp, I think the common narrative is like, you fucking push hard.
Yeah.
You push hard to come into that comp. For me, I was like, if I'm competing, I'm kicking back.
Yeah.
I've done all the hard work. I've just done, you know, 6 months of training or, you know,
yeah.
at that time, my last comp, it was 6 months of solid jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Coming into the comp, like, I'm kicking back, right? I'm creating space for my feminine so that my masculine can recharge.
Yeah.
So that when it comes to competing, like, he's got full strength.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not coming in this yeah. depleted, fucking worn out masculine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, I was hardly training coming into that comp. I didn't tell anyone I was competing because I didn't want the pressure of and that masculine, you know, because I mean the masculine is driven by pressure
yeah
a lot of the time, right? The yeah. feminine isn't. We crumble under pressure. Yeah. So I was like, I don't want anyone knowing until the last second that I'm competing.
Okay, cool.
Because I don't want people looking at me. I don't want people fucking, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need people telling me, like, go harder.
Yeah.
I trust my inner masculine to drive me when he needs to drive me, right? Yeah. And you know, like, the final days leading in, I stopped training. I was doing float tanks. I was spending time in the bath. I remember getting a message from one of my training partners. He's like, where the fuck are you? You're not at training. I'm like, yeah, I'm in the bath. And he was like, what? Like, he was one of the ones who did know that I was competing. Yeah. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, man. I'm relaxing. Yeah. And that was a very successful comp for me, like double gold, you know, and two very, like, clear wins. And I know it's because I didn't burn myself out. I gave myself so much space to relax and recover and be, you know, at full power.
Yeah.
So that when I hit go, I fucking hit go.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why, like, women, I watch so many women who they're either overdeveloped in their masculine
mm-hmm.
and they can't relax into their feminine
mm-hmm.
or they're underdeveloped in their masculine
mm-hmm.
and they're flaky.
Yeah.
You know, they're wishy-washy.
Yeah.
The biggest kicker for me in business, 2020, say similar time when you hit go, yeah. I hit go coincidentally. 2020 was when I was like, Ryan, I need some fucking structure.
Yeah.
I've spent the last however many years in business doing it from this feminine state. I need structure.
Yeah.
So that I can keep my business playful and light and yeah. feeling good and juicy and all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in business, you know, the way you do that is through systems and, you know, even this week, like slightly off tangent, because there's another point I want to come back to around knowing how you operate. But yeah, the business side of things, yeah, if you are a female in business, then, you know, using those systems and having structure that you can flow within. And to a degree, I think a lot of creatives are like that. Not just women are creative, but if you're creative minded, then you need to put structure in place that allows you to flow and create the best way without completely sabotaging or fucking up everything you're working for. Yeah. But yeah, back to the jiu-jitsu thing where you were saying knowing how you prepare. And that's relevant to everybody, not just in jiu-jitsu, just in fucking life, that you need to know how you operate.
Yeah.
Right? That's in a relationship. That's having communication, having, you know, if you're talking about a problem with a work colleague or whatever, you need to know how you work, right? Meaning if you know that you need to have a conversation to resolve a conflict with someone and they're the type of person that is just a bull at a gate, then you need to put a strategy in place to go, well, I know myself well enough that if I feel I'm getting overwhelmed, I need to be confident to remove myself from the conversation. So I think knowing, not just assuming that you're like everybody else, but knowing how you like to show up. And in your example, it was jiu-jitsu of going, well, no, I'm not going to train like everybody else because that doesn't actually work for me. I'm just simply going to listen to music, maybe do some interpretive dance, do some twerking, blow some bubbles in the pool or in the bath, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's huge.
It's actually very spot on, my prep for that comp.
Yeah, well, that's because I told you how I prepare for comp.
True.
Have a bubble bath.
Well, even like, you know, I look at it day to day at jiu-jitsu. Like, I think there's, and this, I mean, this is part of the reason why I love martial arts so much. Because it is this male-dominated sport, and it's still in the long run very underdeveloped in terms of it being for females.
Yeah.
And so there's still this old school mentality of like push, 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 go, 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 don't be a pussy. And, you know, like it's this, oh, you're a fucking tough female if you do martial arts, and you have to be tough and you don't fucking cry and like you suck it up. And I think that that's a very unhealthy way of being for women. You know, like if, like, yes, like, fuck, we for sure we're tough women to do jiu-jitsu. However, I don't believe that to be a tough female, you have to like choke back, push back tears or, you know, like keep it inside. And so I know for me, I get more shit done when I let myself feel my emotions.
Yeah.
And so the amount of, and this is across the board, this is in relationship, this is in business, this is in jiu-jitsu. Like if I push it down and wait for the quote unquote right time to feel it, it wreaks havoc.
Yeah.
I shut down. I can't, I'm useless. If I let it flow as it's there, it actually makes me a better partner, a better business owner, a better athlete, you know, all facets of my life. And so it makes me laugh. Bless the poor guys that I train with, because it freaks them out because it's unfamiliar. There's been that many times where I've been training and I'm getting frustrated and I'm getting upset and I'm doubting myself or whatever it may be. And in those moments, I think it's to push it down. Don't let anyone see that you're fucking crying. You know, this is the narrative that comes up for me. And then I'm like, fuck that. I know it's detrimental to me to push it down. It's not actually making me a better athlete. And I would just be doing it for the sake of coming across as tough. So the amount of times during a role where I've said to my training partner, hey, just a heads up, if I cry, it's not you. I'm just releasing energy. Don't stop rolling.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of a roll and I'm like crying, but I'm still rolling. Like, and I'm still, you know, like I'm doing decent, you know, and I've given this advice to female, you know, world champion athletes that I've worked with where I'm like, if you need to fucking get through your pad round, this is talking to Muay Thai and mixed martial arts.
Yep.
If you need to fucking bawl your eyes out through that round, do it.
Yeah.
Use it. As women, part of our power is our emotions.
Yeah.
So fucking use it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember this one time, a world champion Muay Thai fighter kind of brought up in that methodology of like, don't cry, be tough. And she finally let out, you know, like she spent this, you know, her rounds in tears. And she messaged me after. She's like, I fucking tapped into something I've never tapped into before.
Wow.
You know, and she was like, I was so afraid of judgment of if my pad holder saw me crying. But she's like, I stepped in and I let my inner masculine hold the container of like, yeah, of safety and of creating that, yeah, structure where it's okay to be feminine.
Yeah.
And she's like, it was like I took the handbrake off.
Yeah.
You know? And like, you wouldn't think it because it doesn't make sense in a martial arts to be, yeah, crying while you're still doing your thing.
Yeah.
But very true. As women, like, it's huge.
Yeah. My strategy has been...
You cry too when you're old, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's to sweat that much, it hides the tears. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That is my exact strategy. Used it. That's how I got my purple belt. Right? It was 8 years of just crying but sweating at the same time.
Christian works so hard. He's always dripping in sweat.
Yeah, and it's actually like, tears.
It's just my tears. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's been my strategy.
Hey, if it works.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Fucking painful when sweat drips in your eye.
Yeah.
It's worse when someone else's sweat drips in your eye. Oh,
when someone's sweat drips in your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Off like they're into their beard and you're just trying to take a breath like, and then you get that drop and you're like, you're like, oh my God. You're like, I know we're close because we're wrestling with clothes on. It's, you know, like, what how do people explain it? Folding and washing with people's doing it.
My friend referred to it the other day as murder yoga.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so forced yoga.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, go to downward dog. You're like, I don't want to. And they're like, fuck you, you're going.
Here, have this this back bend.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my back doesn't bend like that. Too fucking bad.
You're like, I got news for you. It's called the twister. Your back does bend, buddy. I'm like, I think I'm tapping. You can't. This isn't the position. No, this is my position. I'm tapping out now. Oh, fuck. Jiu-jitsu's fun. You've got to be some type of dementia human to do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Because it's like, let's put pajamas on and roll around. And see, that used to really piss me off. When I started jiu-jitsu, my friends at the time would be, you know, oh, you roll around in your pajamas. And I'd be like, you don't fucking understand. Like, it's not pajamas. It's a gi. Are you stupid? You know, and then or you're like, yeah, but I could totally fuck you up in my pajamas. Right? Or, you know, they'd say it's gay. So, oh, what, you roll around the floor with men? Like, yeah. But you don't understand. And now, like, once you sort of get over that,
yeah,
you're just like, fucking whatever. Anyway, I don't know where that was going, but yeah, you've got to be a little bit weird.
Totally.
To deliberately choose to go, hey, I'm gonna go and spend the next 90 minutes to 2 hours to get choked out.
Mm. Yeah.
And not in a sexual way. You know, like let's just do it for fun. Yeah. And you know what? Let's do it for a whole bunch of different positions.
Yeah.
And let's learn to choke someone out with, you know, our arms, our wrists, yeah, their collar, my collar.
Yeah.
Their belt, my belt, my legs. Like, you can choke people out a whole bunch of different ways. And then they do it back to you.
Yeah.
But no, I do like it. But getting back to the emotional side of it, mm-hmm. where, you know, you were saying for females out there to let that masculine be the container for the feminine to express, I think that is very relevant to men as well in their own way.
Mm.
That, and I can only talk about my personal experience, but when I started jiu-jitsu many, many, many years ago, and look, I've had a few years off, so I need to get back to it sooner rather than later, but I do have a plan. Anyway, when I started, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was probably a form of therapy for me.
Mm, totally. Because totally, it is.
It was probably some of the hardest times of my life, but when I went to JITS, every class, right, so let's say 24-hour day, I'd sleep 6 or 7, probably closer to 7. So that leaves you with, I don't know, 7, is it 17 hours or something out of a day? I think so. 8 hours at work, so then you're down to 9 hours. An hour there, an hour home, so then you're down to like 6 or 7 hours left. And I would typically do the stand-up class and then mm-hmm. the jits class as well. But for all the waking hours outside of jiu-jitsu, I was thinking about, you know, how stressed I was or, like, my problems,
mm-hmm.
okay? But then I'd go to jits, and if I was training and shoot fighting, if I was training for 2 or 3 hours, it was 2 or 3 hours where I was actually at peace.
Yeah.
Nothing else entered my head.
Yeah.
There's a really cool thing about being choked out, paying your bills, your car, your mortgage, thinking about dinner. None of that is relevant yeah. when you've got some 90-kilo guy hanging off your neck.
Totally.
You're just thinking about, where's my next breath coming from?
Yeah.
And although, like, I joke about that, there was an amazing peace with that yeah. as well, because it meant no matter how bad my week was,
yeah.
every night I went to jits, I knew I got a break.
Yeah.
And, like, then it was so fucking important for me, because I didn't have the tools I had now.
Mm.
Like, I didn't know I can sit down and journal. I can do emotional balancing tools. I can ask myself some questions, right? I could go to jiu-jitsu. Mm. And then when I trained down south with Tom, I had an hour drive home. Mm. Like, it was an hour there, an hour drive home. And then what I noticed was, and I think this is relevant to my life as well, if I finish the 2.5 hour class or the 3 hour class, because you're going there, you do all the fucking classes, right? If I got in the car and then had an hour drive home, I'd get 5 minutes down the road and I would know if I left anything in the tank.
Mm.
And, like, to put context behind that, let's say we had 5 rounds of sparring at the end. I may have lost all 5. But if I knew that in each round I gave it 100%, the outcome didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because when I got in the car, I was driving home and I'm like, I left nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fucking spent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go home and I'd be content with the amount of effort I put in, because there was no doubt.
Yeah.
I wasn't there going, oh, maybe I could have got that, but I gassed out.
Yeah.
Or maybe I didn't take that opportunity, like I, you know, just whatever the fucking excuse was. Compared to doing that drive home and going, you didn't actually put everything into it.
Mm-hmm.
So from a guy's perspective, it was the emotion that I would use to drive those wrestles. Yes,
totally. Totally. Yeah.
Because, like, if I was really fucked off, you know, you'd pick the biggest guy in the gym and go, all right, let's go. I was probably the biggest guy in the gym, but second biggest guy in the gym, right? But, you know, there were some fucking units at Tom's gym, and Tom's a fucking weapon as well.
Mm.
So, you know, there were people that you could, if you wanted to, you could go, hey, man, I had a shitty day, and they'd go, me too. And, you know, then I'd go, fuck. Like, if you've had a shitty day, I've had a shitty day, one of us is fucking going home sore. And we're like, yeah, it's like two rhinoceroses fucking fighting. But yeah, so that emotion would be used to drive it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So I could keep this going forever. However, I'm very mindful of time.
Yeah. So and I've got a chair to look at.
Can we make this a part two of...
Part two of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Beautiful. Cool.
Thank you. For those listening, where can they find you?
On Facebook, Insta. So it is Quality Relationships on Facebook. The tag is Quality Relationships AU on both Facebook and Insta. You can also go to www.qualityrelationships.com.au. We've got a line of products, but really, you know, for anyone that wants to find more out about themselves and their relationship, regardless of whether they're single or a couple, we've just got an assessment. There's a free assessment that people can do. Also, there's a paid one where you sit down with me or one of the team. It takes about an hour, and it's incredibly valuable. But yeah, over that, we go through six areas of your relationship and sit down with you over Zoom and map it all out and, like, literally show you exactly where you are and what to work on. Beautiful. So incredibly valuable. So yeah, if you're interested, go check that out.
Beautiful.
If not, then don't.
Beautiful. I'll put all the links in the show notes.
Sweet.
Cool. Thank you. Love you.
You are welcome. Love you too.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Live Free Experience podcast. Now, I'm a real person back here, so every mention, every share, every bit of feedback is deeply valued, and I love nothing more than hearing what golden nuggets are landing for you. So if something did land for you, or there's someone in your world who needs to hear this, please share it with them and share it to your social media. Tag me in it so that I'm aware of it and I can share it to my story. As I said, every little bit counts, every little bit helps get this message out there. And I want to close off today's conversation. Ladies, this one's for you. I have a free ebook and audio training called Fierce and Free. And this is for the woman who is looking to really step things up a level in her world, looking to overcome people-pleasing tendencies, build greater boundaries, and just be more discerning in where their energy is going. So you can get access to that one free at www.fiercefreewoman.com. And I will speak to you all soon.